Vivaldi's Four Seasons means that it's time once again for this week's Senior Moments program. The Four Seasons theme mirrors our lives, and hopefully we will all have many more seasons to enjoy. We do this show on behalf of the Glen Cove Senior Center. Good morning, everyone. I'm Nina Held.
And I'm Stuart Held. Senior Moments is here every Tuesday at 11 in the morning. Keep us on your calendar to tune in. Our producer, Maria Stieglitz, is also in her usual seat in the studio. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Stuart and Phil and Nina and Chris.
Yes.
It's great to be with you on this great day.
You got everybody.
You covered it all. Today we're going to be speaking to a documentary cinematographer who has a very interesting background, including a film he has recently had restored. This film has never been made public until this past year. The film is a 1970s day in the life of a Harlem school. At the time, Phil Grice was a teacher in the school and had wonderful access to help make the film. We'll be talking about this project in a few moments.
And now to introduce our guest.
Yes, Phil Grice is a documentary cinematographer who has worked on hundreds of films, primarily documentaries, during his 48-year career. The list of his credits include the National Emmy Award-winning and nominated documentaries Vermeer, Master of Light, which was beautiful, I saw that, 88 Seconds in Greensboro, and Bogart, The Untold Story, The World of Ideas with Bill Moyers, and The Mafia's Greatest Hits.
I think that was just recently played on television.
Really?
Yeah, I think
so. Well, we'll have to ask Phil about that when we are talking to him. From 1979 through 1998, Phil freelanced as cinematographer for the BBC, working on 183 different documentaries, many of which were telecast on PBS series, including American Masters, Frontline, and Nova. Phil grew up in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, graduated from James Madison High School, and earned an associate's degree in agronomy from Farmingdale State College. I can't wait to talk to him about that. But then he began pursuing his passion. He studied film production at City College of New York and pursued his master's in fine arts in film and TV at UCLA. In 1959, when he was 16, Phil began audio recording broadcasts that were live or on videotape. Today, he possesses what he believes to be the largest television audio archive in the country, totaling over 20,000 hours of TV audio, and that's from 1946 to 1982. Most recently, however, Phil has revisited a documentary he made in 1970 when he was a Harlem schoolteacher. He tweaked it a bit and has currently submitted his digitized, restored, direct cinema documentary, Harlem School 1970, into 13 upcoming film festivals, including the Harlem International Film Festival and the Tribeca Film Festival. Phil Grice, welcome back to Senior Moments. You're doing a doubleheader here.
Thank you. It's been 10 months since
I last graced. Yeah, could you imagine time passes?
The studio with
you. I had to go look up the previous script to figure out
it was March.
What went on.
March 2017.
Wow. Yeah, it just seems like yesterday, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. Now, yes, it was 11 months ago, and that's when we discussed your audio tape collection. You want to bring us up to date on that?
Well, it continues to expand. Archival Television Audio, Inc., ATVAudio.com, and new titles are constantly being added to the website. There's some expanded...
But you don't bother recording them yourself anymore.
The last material that I recorded off the air would be in the 70s. I have no interest in recording anything that everyone else can record. I mean, it's ubiquitous today.
Yeah, yes. And DVR.
Everything exists today.
It's true.
One of the enchantments, really, retrospectively, and, you know, one doesn't think about it at the time when one is doing something, usually, was that most people were not recording their television in the 50s and in the 60s and in the early 70s. And anyone could have done that if they had an audio reel-to-reel tape recorder, but most did not.
Of course.
And not to the extent that I did. And the dozen or so collectors whose collections I now am privy to have as part of my archive.
Well, as my father-in-law said, TV is a passing
fad.
It was always considered ephemeral, and that's why so many of the tapes are no longer existing. Even the bigwigs and the Hollywood executives and people who were historians in the 50s and 60s really did not take a look at its importance, including the Library of Congress. I mean, not important.
Wow.
Do people still call you to rent or use the tape?
Oh, that's part of the fun. I'm getting constantly emails from people all over the world with regard to material that certainly they cannot find on video. It does not exist, but it does exist in the archive as audio. So the glass is half filled. You get a sense from a broadcast in a way that you cannot get on the printed page. You can read about it.
Yes.
You can even get transcripts. But to hear the nuances and the actual program, that's the fun of going back in time.
Does it take up a lot of space in your house? Can you walk around?
No, cannot walk around.
Well, the reason why I asked, because we have another person who we deal with who's part of our team, Dale Zerbrick. We visited his house, and he is, I guess, a musicologist.
He is.
Uh-huh. I guess that's the best way to put it.
He has a collection.
And Dale has a collection. You have to walk in sideways when you walk his house.
A very similar experience.
Ah.
Oh, my.
I mean, it is literally, you don't want to be over 200 pounds. And
I guess that leaves
you want to know how to navigate diagonally, you know.
Well, okay, so that.
Well, just for curiosity, do you wish to eventually put this into some museum?
It has to end up somewhere. I mean, that would be a shame if everything that I have amassed over the years would be dumpstered. And quite often, a lot of what I've acquired was at the 12th hour when that material was going to be trashed.
Wow.
People had no foresight, even as recently as 20 years ago. And I could tell lots of anecdotes about archives I've saved at the last moment.
Yes. Well, do tell. Give us an example,
Well,
please.
I think one salient example is an article that appeared in the New York Daily News, January 1st, 1996. And this correspondent came over to my house. We were living in Albertson at the time. And a very lovely story. It was in the paper, New Year's Day. And a person read about it. He was a janitor at the Helen Keller Institute for the Blind on the island. And he said, wow, maybe this person, Phil Grice, would be interested in what the Helen Keller Institute for the Blind is about to throw out. There was a third floor room where 5 years previous donation, thousands and thousands of broadcast TV audio air checks. And he called me, and my first instinct was that, this does not exist. It just seemed incredible to me. He rattled off a bunch of titles. Yeah. Long story short, he asked if he could take the material as opposed to having it dumpstered. He did. And over a period of, 11 years and $12,000 later, I inherited that resource. And it's over 5,000 TV audio air checks that this one man recorded.
Yeah.
Stu is giving me the don't tap on the
don't
table.
Right.
It was that exciting. And there's some rare golden moments there. And that's one example of how a resource was saved by someone who really diligently taped for 20 years, had multiple recorders, much more diligent than I. And it's something that now I possess, and it's within my archive.
That's wonderful.
That's a great story.
The only thing that I can think of that relates directly to us as far as saving all of this material is that 50th anniversary special of Carol Burnett, for instance.
Yeah,
all of those skits. Can you imagine if those were lost? Senior Moments with Stu and Nina is back with Phil Grice speaking about his history, which started as a hobby and has turned into a huge collection of TV and radio audio recordings of shows from 1946 to 1982. Was this about the time you were working with the BBC? Was the project done here in the States or in England?
You're referring to the film Harlem School, 1970. The archive predates that. The archive, my archive, certainly predates that. It goes back to the late 50s.
I want to interrupt and say this has been bothering me the whole morning. Agronomy?
That's what you were directed into first.
What has that got to do with cinematography?
Well, it was the first experience that I had in college. And at 17, I found myself living in a dorm at Farmingdale State University. At that time, it was called the State University Agricultural and Technical Institute.
There we go. Yes.
I'll always be remembering that institute name.
Yes.
You know, it made you feel like you were with Jack Nicholson, the institute.
Yeah.
And I majored in agronomy. And you know, in retrospect, I have a two-year degree in Associate of Applied Science in agronomy. And it was basically my mother's guidance that convinced me to have a opportunity, or at least to, for that period of time, to find something that might be security for me.
A steady paying job.
In my later years, like now.
Like now.
See, right now, that paying off. Maybe it would have, because I would have been getting, you know, this and that as far as security.
But it did provide
you. That's what I did.
That's what you did. And it did provide you, at best, with the most wonderful stories.
But, you know, life is a bunch of anecdotes for all of us. We all have them. And I certainly have my share. There were times where I remember being in a silo, forking out rotten silage. You're 75 feet up.
Yeah.
It's very dark. The circumference was this table, small, and I had a student partner down at the bottom with a wheelbarrow, and I thought, okay, I've done it. I've forked out all the rotten silage. He's taking it away. There was one more pocket. I went for that pocket, and I hit a nest of rats. And I'm up there, and I'm thinking hydrophobia. I was going through my mind.
Yeah.
The rats are going, and I'm jumping around with a pitchfork, and I can imagine my partner, because he was looking up, and many of these rats had no place to go. They were jumping out of the silo, and it was raining rats
raining
down on him. That was the last time I was ever up in a silo, ever.
I believe it, because it sounds like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom or something.
True story. I mean, really? that was wild.
That was wild. But you have another story about when...
Well, the other anecdote in Farmingdale was in the field.
Yeah.
We were learning the art of procreation, bull and the cow.
The bull.
We had the cow with the class and the foreman in the field. We had the stanchion. They locked the cow in the stanchion. It couldn't move much. And then the bull was to sire the cow, and it was having a difficult time doing its duty and its service. And the foreman said to me, "Grice, help that cow get the tail." So the tail was in the way, and I picked up the tail to give the bull a better bullseye shot, but it still missed, and I got about a quart of semen on my dungaree jacket, my favorite dungaree jacket. And the funny part to me in retrospect was I'm getting out of there. I had to go back to the dorm, change. And there were like 10 cows in the field charging at me as I'm running to get out of there. They are with the scent of the semen.
I was going to say, you must have smelled delicious.
I did. But a lot. I mean, well, you don't realize you don't, how much.
Oh, well, Rob Danagian, we have to use that to refer to the bull, don't we?
Bulls don't need a semen bank.
No, they don't.
In anticipation of discussing your upcoming documentary on the Harlem School, here is You've Got to Be Carefully Taught from the Broadway show South Pacific.
So tell me, Phil,
talk about this film that we're...
Well, that's very exciting to me.
Well, I'll be very frank. I did watch it. Maria did watch it. We did have a full chance. So it's not a surprise to us, but we'd like to talk about it.
Yeah. What made you decide to revisit this early film of yours?
That's an excellent question. And I'm so thankful I have done that because a year ago, about 15 months ago, I was diagnosed with bladder cancer. I was operated on. The tumor was removed successfully. At this moment, I'm cancer-free. I continue to be cancer-free. Cool. But bladder cancer does have a tendency to return. So, you know, it's like every day is a beautiful day to me. That experience really is another wake-up call.
Yes.
Anyone who has, cancer or something in their life that's out of the blue, it's a wake-up call.
Oh, yeah.
And that and the turnaround of my son, Ethan, who for 11 years had issues and a journey that I could speak about for ages and write a book about. Mm-hmm. He turned his whole life around 3 years ago. He's blessed Jane, my wife and I, with a grandchild, our
wonderful.
First. And we're going to be celebrating our 49th anniversary coming up, our first grandchild. And then they were married in July, and they just moved into a home. All of this in a very short period of time. So that, plus the more salient experience that my cinematography career has waned. Nobody wants a 75-year-old to shoot anymore. And I will be 75 Groundhog's Day, so that's coming up. All of that entered into...
You're a youngster.
Well, yeah. I'm the only one who knows Stu's real age, you know. She's 65, you know. So I decided I've been putting this off too long. There's no point in putting this off anymore. And I had literally in a closet stored away this film that I had shot for 47 years. It had never really been shown publicly. My intention initially was to show it to the school where I had taught and where that film was shot.
Yeah.
But that was not to be. I did not finish it in June. I edited it in August. And it was weeks before Jane and I, my wife, we moved to Los Angeles for a number of years. And I began my professional career as a cinematographer right after I shot this film.
Uh-huh.
And it never really saw the light of day. A very renowned cinematographer, DP, Oscar-winning Haskell Wexler, was my teacher at UCLA. And he invited me over his house to see the film Harlem School. He and the faculty at UCLA were the only people to ever see the film.
Oh.
And I put it away for all those years, and it would have been a crime to, not have this exposed and shared with the public. Yes. And that's what is being done now.
Wow.
So I went back, I digitized it, we re-edited it, we refreshed the track.
Now, when you say you did, you actually did all the work.
No, I did the creative work with a very dear friend, Ben Wolf, and I give him super credit on the DVD box. His name is as big as mine. And he was so instrumental in being able to help me. He's computer savvy, I'm not. So we did, restoration in terms of programs that he was familiar with.
And the film was still in good shape.
Thank God the composite print that I had two composite answer prints, and I used the best one. The negative would have been extremely costly. I went to Duart, which is a major lab in Manhattan, and everyone has worked Duart. They've been around since the 20s.
Wow.
And they were able to give me a high-res digital transfer from the original 16 millimeter composite Ansa print.
Wow.
That's impressive. Well, I have to say, really, in light of everything you've told us now, congratulations on the film. Mazel tov becoming a grandpa.
Yeah, thank you.
Happy birthday.
The show still goes on.
And the show goes on.
And the show still goes on. And, you know, it should go on. And for all of the senior moment citizens in our audience,
yes,
life should always be with some passion, no matter how old we are.
It's the
key to good living.
So
now here you have this film that was taken 47 years ago. How did you show it to you? How did you look at it?
Well, I still have my original 16 millimeter Bell and Howell projector, which I bought in 1963.
Wow!
From a company that's now defunct, Cameramart in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
And
friends of mine.
It still works. It still works very well, and I was able to go back to it. Projected it. I even looked at some of the outtakes. You know, in the original part of our show here, you had mentioned that Apocalypse Now, which is 139 minutes.
Yeah.
230 hours, 139 minutes in its finished form.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent of 115-1 shooting ratio. I shot Harlem School, I'll brag. I shot Harlem School 1970, 1.75-1, less than 2-1. Most of the film is what you see that I shot. There's only about 30 minutes of outtakes.
Ah.
I went through those outtakes. Some of those outtakes are in the new version.
Well, I'm just curious. You did this, you were kind of recovering at home, and you had nothing to do. So
I had plenty to do. just to edify everyone, once my therapy was done back last March, I was in good health.
Yeah.
I never really had adverse reaction.
Good.
So
good
what did
to
you
hear.
Think when you watched it again?
Well, it's amazing to realize almost a half a century ago the way the educational system existed, especially in Harlem. It's an inner city elementary school. I realized by doing a lot of research that no other filmmaker ever did a similar film in the 60s, 70s, or 80s until 1993 when, and I've been in touch with Alan Raymond, his film with his wife Susan called I Am a Promise, The Children of Stanton Elementary School. It won an Oscar in 1993 for Best Feature-length documentary. You do not find another film before 1993 that is a feature-length, especially a feature-length elementary school, fly-on-the-wall type of approach. And I was there at the right time, at the right place. I was a teacher. Everyone knew me. Yeah. I got a handshake from the principal. There was nothing in writing. And I was able to go at will anywhere and do any kind of filming, no restrictions.
Wow, so this really filled a niche, actually. This filled a void.
Oh, a major void. Yeah. When you look back now, it's a historic document.
Yeah. Well, oh, my God. May you win an Academy Award.
Well, I've entered it into a number of film festivals, and the rules are you cannot have a film in a venue where it's TV, you can't commercially profit from it until the film festival run is over. So I'm looking at 2018 as my film festival year.
Well, this is exciting. It'll be exciting to keep an eye on this.
And I'm inviting all of you, and you, Chris, too, if you have an interest. February 24th, next month, is Black History Month. And the film will be screened at the Paley Center for Media.
Ah.
2:00, Saturday, February 24th. I welcome you all.
Thank you. That's
big screen, wonderful. Big screen. We'll have a Q&A at the end.
Ooh.
And they have a 200-seat auditorium.
Yes,
so when
to.
You go
I'd
to these
to.
Festivals, you also do a talk.
Not necessarily. I will be doing a talk February 24th at the Paley Center.
Is that in, is that
it's
in Queens
It's 52nd
College?
Street between 6th and 5th.
Oh, in Manhattan.
This is the according center to our, for TV, you know, and all
yes,
the
yes,
old
yes.
stuff.
According to our governor, we would have to pay an extra toll to go there. But
it's on a Saturday. I don't think that
it's on a Saturday.
well, it sounds very. I would love you to give
would
us a shout
anything?
Out. On
I just got a big thank you very much from Vern Gay from News.
Oh, Vern Gay. Yes, Newsday. Vern
Gay. He's coming.
Yeah. Okay. Oh,
well, we have a break coming up here.
Yeah. Trump is not coming.
Senior Moments with Nina and Stu is back with Phil Grice, and we're speaking about his revisited documentary on Harlem School, 1970. Let's continue with this, Phil. You wanted to get the school on board with this.
Originally, I did want to go back to this school. I still do. And I thought, what a great moment. What a great solidification of the community to go back with a film that was done almost 50 years ago, almost a half a century, and show it for the very first time and be able to find teachers,
yes, and
students, paraprofessionals, employees during the time I shot this film.
Yeah.
You know, in
that's
early
right. They would only be about 60 years old.
Teachers would be in their middle to upper 70s, 80s. Yeah. I found one teacher who's 90 years old. And then students would be in their upper 50s, and they would have grandchildren.
Of course,
grandchildren
yes.
to see.
Wouldn't
Grandpa and Grandma
chills.
For the first time.
Yeah. As children on this
but I
film.
Have not received any kind of response.
Oh, what that is such a pity.
It's awful.
And you said you even managed to locate a student who lives at the same address.
Well, that was
he
a wild moment, yeah. And I've reached out. I haven't gotten any response. I have about 20 reference names that I held on to over the years. Teachers from that year, many of them I can't find at all, but there are about 11 that I have found addresses for or emails, and I'm in the process of communicating. Not a response yet.
Well, maybe they're all in Florida.
Or somewhere else where it's very hot.
Or somewhere else. Well, who knows?
Well, I have to say, the other thing that struck me when I was watching the movie was how everybody dressed.
Right.
It's so different than the culture of today. I mean, they were all in white shirts and dark trousers or gray trousers. I mean, it was. How did you do the filming without them playing to you instead of playing by themselves?
Well, first, it was mandatory to wear a tie. And I taught for 3 years, and I couldn't help but be Alfred Hitchcock here, and there's some moments of me in the film. I think the key to good direct cinema, or cinema verite, however you want to use the semantics, is to be a fly on the wall, again, a cliche, but literally, if you take it as a metaphor, you want to be invisible. You want to be able to capture the moment so that an audience can feel like they were there. And in order to do that, all through my film career, and I filmed in many classes subsequently, it's always a question, especially around young children who probably are less aware of you than adults, is to really be basically very low-key.
Invisible.
And just be able to never command anyone, never raise my voice, you know, not tell anybody to do anything. Again, most of what you see in the film is spontaneous.
Yeah.
I very rarely ever did anything with maybe a few exceptions. There's a dolly shot in the cafeteria. So that was intentional, and I knew I was going to do that, and I had someone push me on a on a food cart.
Oh. You
know? I mean, things like that, but most of it never was secondary in terms of a preparation.
Yeah.
And I got what I got.
And
you had to get lucky also, because as I mentioned to Stu earlier, I worked with a Bolix camera, spring wound. The film ran only 25 seconds before you had to rewind it. I only had 2.5 minutes per roll before I had to put another roll of film in the camera, so I was really handcuffed. The sound was on a cassette recorder, off mic. I only had 2 seconds of sync. So later when I was editing this, I had to juggle a lot.
Wow.
And that's why there are 750 cuts in the film. As to Fred Wiseman's High School, if you're familiar with that film, which was done 2 years before me, which has 190 cuts, because he could take long, long sequences. I could not.
Now we understand that Harlem School 1970 will be shown in its main auditorium screening facility during Black History Month on Saturday and Sunday, February 17th and 18th.
No,
is that correct?
It was changed to the 24th. February 24th and 25th. I will be there on the 24th.
Okay.
And there will be a question and answer session after the showing of the film. It will simultaneously also play in Los Angeles at the Paley Center. Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
I won't be in both places.
I'm trying
to work that out, but it's not going to happen.
No.
And I look forward to a full audience. I invite everyone. There's no fee.
Oh, good.
And the Paley Center, 52nd Street between 5th and 6th.
52nd.
2 o'clock showing.
Okay, I'm writing this down. 52nd between 5th and 6th.
Right. And I might add, we're currently engaging in a series put out at Film Forum. I don't know if you're aware of this.
Forum,
it started on the 19th. They're showing 58 direct cinema verite documentaries. And among them are, films that personify the movement going back to primary, which is considered the first direct cinema feature in this country, done by Robert Drew and D.A. Pennybaker and Richard Leacock.
How many film festivals have you actually entered?
13. Rattle them off real quick, should I? Do we have time?
Please.
San Francisco International Film Festival, Hot Docs Canadian International Film Festival, Full Frame Documentary Film Festival, Tribeca Film Festival, Harlem International Film Festival, New York City Film Festival, AFI Docs, L.A. Film Festival, Chicago International, and the oldest film festival in the world, the Edinburgh International Film Festival. Whoa. So most of it happens bing, bang, boom in April, May. And if there are conflicts, one cannot show in both. It depends on the city, the state, how they're showing it. So we'll find out.
Yeah.
We'll find out what
is there an entry fee?
Oh, absolutely. I've spent hundreds of dollars in just getting this entered. And I've also taken, the steps to copyright the film, Library of Congress. So that's been done.
Okay.
And I will know whether I'm going to be, it's one thing to submit with a fee. It's another thing to be accepted. So hopefully I'll get some acceptances and hopefully I'll get a few opportunities to be at the festival when it's shown.
Yeah.
And
that
this is a whole fun year for me. Whatever
it
will be,
sounds,
will be.
Sounds
it's just
wonderful.
Interesting.
Yes. Now, I since it is now time for the Academy Awards, I understand the nominations are in and all, I've always been wondering where they mention these documentaries, and I say, where are these documentaries shown? How come? Where do we see them? How do we see them? And here I'll have a chance to see.
Well,
one.
A qualification for an Academy Award is that you have your film screened in a bona fide theater. And that has to come after film festivals. But once it's screened, then you are eligible.
I see.
And that also includes TV for an Emmy. You have to have it shown on television. So I will do that, after these film festivals.
Oh, maybe I'll see it on HBO. Who
well,
knows?
That would be a good place. We have a music break here.
Yes.
So, Phil, the floor is yours.
All right. For anyone who would like to watch the trailer of Harlem School 1970, one can just go online and type in https://:// and then put in Vimeo, vimeo.com/2403255557.
Okay, now
password.
Still more?
You need a password. You need a password.
Ooh.
Password is Phil. P capital small H small I small L, and it'll come up.
Okay.
Oh, I get it.
Now, that maybe people weren't prepared with a pencil. Get together with a pencil or a pen. We're going to repeat it once more because it's worth doing.
HTTP, okay, you know, HTTP, okay, but then the key after that initial entry is Vimeo, Vimeo.com/, that's diagonal, 240-325-557, password, capital P, small h, small I, small L.
I know you have to put the capital P because I couldn't get on it. We're using a small P.
Could I ask a question about this? If, to make it easier, is it possible to just go into Chrome or Google and put in the Vimeo?
No, it doesn't
you
work.
You have to do the HTTP thing?
It seems to
well,
be
HTTP.
Needed.
No?
That's just a
Chris is
preface.
Shaking his head.
What is that called?
We got a
what do you call that, Chris? when you have to have the HTTP.
The URL.
Right, so you have to have the URL in order to connect with the rest of it.
Got
if you
it.
Just put
okay.
in Vimeo in
He's
Google, it doesn't
do
come up.
Okay. All right. That answers
All
my
right.
question.
Well, how about your website?
My website, there are two websites. One for my cinematography work over the years is www.philgrice.com. And for the archive, it's www.atvaudio.com.
Can they get directed to the VIM number through your website?
If anyone still has a hard time, they can always contact me, whether it be you know by the website or by phone. I solicit all calls.
Sure.
And I'd love to share the film. I mean, the whole key is really, after almost a half a century, sharing this with educators, film historians.
Yeah.
I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. This is like finding a lost tomb.
Oh yeah,
opinion.
Well, as I said, you are really Indiana Jones, and
thank you. I maybe it was my one of my purposes for being on the planet.
Yeah, okay.
We all have a purpose, right?
Right, and I'm just so happy you are sharing your purpose with us. You've been an excellent guest. We really enjoyed
well,
you today,
he's
Phil.
He's been on before.
I know, but he's even more so, and I really am very grateful. And Maria, thank you so much again for the work you do in getting Phil on
it's
the show.
Pleasure.
It is
it's
a pleasure.
It's always been a pleasure, Maria.
Chris, our engineer of today, it's been a wonderful show. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chris.
And thank you, Dale, of course. Yes.
Well, don't leave
we
off
can't
Dale.
We can't forget
Dale. I have to say that this brings, because I was in the film business, this brings back a lot of memories to me as well. We brought over cameras from Japan, as you know, called Nikon. But it was something that, I don't know, I guess I feel akin to you
in
wanting to present it.
Yes.
Well,
so.
Stu, you know that end montage with close to 100 stills, that was all done with my Nikon F Photomic camera. That was all 35 millimeters.
Mutual Admiration Society. Yes,
there
you
go.
Sure.
Well, when we close the show, because this was done about children,
yes,
we couldn't resist this. Does anybody remember "It's You I Like"? You remember that song?
No, not at all. And
it
that was on
Mr. Rogers' theme song. And here is Mr. Rogers singing "It's You I Like."
I like. It's not the things you wear, it's not the way you do your hair, but it's you I like. The way you are right now, the way down deep inside you, not the things that hide you, not your toys, they're just beside you, but it's you I like. Every part of you, your skin, your eyes, your feelings, whether old or new. I hope that you'll remember, even when you're feeling blue, It's you I like. It's you yourself. It's you. It's you I like.
This is Senior Moments on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Nina and Stuart Held saying, before Senior Moments signs off for today, please remember,
youth is a gift of nature, but age is a work of art.
The Glen Cove Senior Center's website is one word, glencoveseniorcenter.com. Thank you for listening. See you on the radio next Tuesday.